wear your sunglasses since we're luminary.
You always
I
shine so
don't
bright.
This is All Things Education, a podcast where three-decade teachers discuss what they know.
The good, the not so good, and the continuous opportunity for high-quality education in Texas.
Join us for a smart conversation as we dig deep into the issues that affect us all in and around our great state.
And here are those three luminous instructors now.
Woohoo! How's it going, y'all?
Hey, everyone.
Hello.
It is summer break, or at least it is summer break for two out of the three of us here. Mm-hmm. How's everybody doing in this early to mid-June?
I'm holding up. I'm still trucking. We're about a month behind in our recording and publishing on the pod. So for anybody that caught our last episode and knows that you guys have been out for a while now, I'm almost there. I've got 1 week left.
The end is in sight. Summer break's been great, y'all. I can't lie. I am definitely in summer mode. I'm forgetting what day of the week it is. I'm sleeping in. I'm going out. And yeah, it's been really beautiful to just kind of decompress from the school year.
Partying.
Decompress, what a great word, because y'all, it is summer break time. It is a time for all of us to relax, to recharge, for me to reinvest in people and sometimes tasks outside of work. Or as some of my less generous friends and family like to say to my face, it's a time of great jealousy for all of those who get, let's say, less time off than we do. But that being said, while a break or a vacation is very welcome, especially as Matthew doing all the things you're doing, I doubt either of you are ever merely idle in your break time. So what keeps you invested in the profession when you get this couple of months off, specifically from the daily grind? What keeps you invested in education?
I have a twofold answer. The first one, I just want to address the envy that you speak of from others, or I'm going to call it a misperception, because I think the idea is that we just party like Matthew all summer long and live willy-nilly and live it up for free. I want everybody to know that teachers are paid an annual salary that is prorated 12 months. So we are paid for the work that we do. We're not paid to do nothing in the summer. We are paid for what we do August to June. I also want to just address the fact that from a mental health standpoint, the break, summer break, is essential to our performance as career educators. I think there's this could be a whole episode of itself, but I think there's a lack of awareness in the nervous system regulation that is required of teachers in order to work with dysregulated students. And so having that time to refresh and reboot is essential to our performance as career educators. And to finally get to the answer to your question, Lance, what I do to stay engaged is, of course, paying attention to the news, paying attention to our local in-district news that happens. I try to limit myself to checking my email just once a week during the summer so that I have a little bit of a boundary there. Of course, attending professional developments, sometimes leading those professional developments. And yeah, we're still busy. The work doesn't stop.
What about you, Matthew?
The work does not stop. That's for sure. But yeah, to stay busy over the summer, this is actually a really important time for me to make some extra money. So right now I am operating three summer camps. I have a esports business along with being a teacher. And so I operate the camps out of an AISD school, and I will be focused on that for a good majority of the summer, prepping those camps and executing and refining them as I go. And then also this little time where I really like to sort of reflect on the school year prior, reflect a little bit on the curriculum, my materials, my lessons, and start to refine those and tweak those so that next year, I can come back with some new ideas, some new materials, and hit the ground running.
I love all that. Y'all both keep me invested just from your share outs here. Like Natalie, I did attend a professional development last week, basically a training which coincidentally covered HQIM. In fact, I sent Natalie and Matthew a text that day saying, this is perfect, after we discussed it last week.
Yeah, we posted it on our Instagram.
Yes, I definitely knew that. And in addition to everything Matthew was saying too, that reflection component being so key to continual growth for ourselves as educators, I am keeping an eye on all of the wheelings and dealings in Texas education news, as you both are as well. And that's kind of what I want to talk about today. A couple of the high priority news items that may or may not be affecting our listeners this summer. And I think, first of all, we got to talk about school vouchers. This has been a really important and heavy topic for the last couple of years. And school vouchers, what is that? School choice? Maybe you've heard it called education savings account. There's a lot of wordplay inherent in this topic. Sometimes the wordplay can be misleading for families or voters about what they will actually get if this comes to pass. But the governor, Governor Abbott, feels like this is the time. The time is nigh to pass this landmark legislation when the lawmakers meet again early in 2025. And why are we talking about it now in June when that's still 6-7 months away? Well, many Republican incumbents in the Texas House of Representatives lost their races for re-election in the primary, which took place back in May, leading the governor to declare that he now has the votes to pass school vouchers. In fact, there were 15 or so vulnerable Republicans who had previously voted against this legislation. And in those hotly contested races, 11 of those seats were gained by the challengers. So Matthew, Natalie, if school vouchers comes to pass, which is definitely going to be an important topic going into the next legislative session, what would this mean for Texas families and specifically the millions of parents who enroll their children in our public schools?
Yeah, so I think vouchers is a really big issue, obviously, in Texas. It's been an issue now in the headlines, in the legislation for well over a year. Governor Abbott has really tried adamantly to push this through. He's run into some major roadblocks, both from Democrats and Republicans, but it is still a hot topic. So I'm glad we're able to talk about it on this episode. Thanks for bringing this up, Lance. As far as what impact vouchers would have on Texas families, you know, I think in some ways, it means that, you know, some parents will have this choice to make, whether they want to now send their children to a private school or whether they want to continue to invest in public education. But I'm not so sure that that choice is going to necessarily be for everyone. Look, I'm all for choice. In education, I'm all for competition. I like that. I taught at a charter school for many years. I now teach at a public school. I see value in both of them. But I think that when you're talking about vouchers, no matter what side you take, I really believe that you've got to come approach this topic from the perspective of equity. Because I think that the whole purpose of public education should be, and I do emphasize should be, to ensure an equal playing field, right? To level the playing field. That means that you are, the investment we put in public education is an investment to facilitate social mobility, right? That we, the idea is that no matter what your income is, no matter where you live, that your child has the right to a quality education. And if you told me that the way that the voucher bill is set up in Texas, that the whole purpose of this bill, the whole purpose of providing vouchers, is to give those who can't afford it the opportunity to attend private school. If that was really the purpose of these vouchers, then I would be on board with that, or I would at least be open to the idea. But I'm really afraid that that's just not the case. On a national level, 80% of voucher recipients are parents who already had their children enrolled in private schools. So those vouchers, those 80% of vouchers, which is coming from public money, are subsidizing the already rich, or presumably the rich. And that is not going to help facilitate social mobility on a state level. It's just not. I think that there are a lot of strange loopholes when it comes to these vouchers that's just going to make it so that the upper class, the wealthy, are able to, you know, have their private education subsidized for them.
Vouchers is just such a complex issue. It's so much more complex than a quick, are you for or against? What is the intent behind the bill? What does it mean long range? Like, there's just so much to unpack there and debunk. So for the sake of this conversation, I know we have other topics to get to. I don't even know where to start in terms of picking the most important one for a soundbite just in this little brief overview. It's really important to me that everybody understands that it is not a clear-cut issue. It sounds like one thing. It's being touted as one thing. It's being fought against as another thing. And then somewhere in there is the actual truth. And I think it's really important for us to point people in the direction of reading the text of the legislation that's proposed when it comes back through, because we know we're going to see it again this legislative session. Abbott has promised as much to do so. And I think at the end of the day, Matthew, you said something along the lines of, you know, everybody believes that their child deserves access to a high quality education. And I think I can speak for the both of you when I say that our collective message is that all children deserve access to that high quality public education, and vouchers fall short in actually affording that opportunity. Though it sounds like everybody gets this golden ticket, you know, to wherever they want to enroll, there's so many things in terms of them actually being able to access those learning institutions. The idea that there is higher quality in a private school versus the public school is a whole other argument that, you know, can of worms that could be opened and needs to be addressed. What that takes away in terms of funding for public schools that generally serve the larger masses of students in the state, how that reduces potentially the quality of education that's available through those institutions. What does that mean for teachers who are just as invested in a public school as they are in a private school? What does that mean for their career and how they grow as educators? I mean, there's so many different directions to go. I think we're probably going to need to devote another episode or maybe more than that, you know, to the conversation as we see it unfold. At the end of the day, I think I really want to urge everyone to be aware of what exactly is being proposed and what it means for the long term.
Certainly. I think y'all are both very eloquent on this issue, and we've got a little bit more time before it really hits the front pages of your local newspaper in January when the legislators meet again. And also in 2025, speaking of funding for public schools, check out this news item. As soon as August of next year, if you are a district that has elementary schools here in Texas, there might actually be a nifty way for your school to get more money from the state. And that way is to teach the Bible. So recently, just a few weeks ago, the Texas Education Agency announced that in conjunction with this statewide push for high quality instructional materials, which we discussed in length last last episode with Ben Mackey. The TEA is in the process of submitting for approval thousands of pages of instructional material, which would cover Bible education for elementary school age kids. And in fact, this is heading for approval by the State Board of Education this November. To get a little bit more specific, we're talking about a $60 per student incentive in additional funding for any school to adopt these materials. In fact, the TEA commissioner, Mike Morath himself, claims that these new materials are an important piece of the content pie that leads to higher literacy for young students. But it does make me wonder if the line between church and state would become increasingly blurry were this to come to pass, were this to be approved by SBEC later this year, and perhaps even biased towards specific beliefs over others. What do y'all think about this motion?
So did you say that they're tying together literacy with this push for this particular content?
Yes. In fact, another news item recently showed that statewide standardized testing scores were down again this year. And so this could be part of the solution to education literacy in the state.
Okay, I have more, you know me, my response is usually with questions for clarity, and you may or may not know the answer to this, but what Bible specifically?
That would be the Christian Bible. Thank you for the clarification. In fact, really quickly, SBOE Chair Aaron Kinsey, he is from Midland, Texas, claims that this not only will increase literacy in the state, but this is the salve, or this is what the state needs as it moves away from other arenas of HQIM, such as the hotly contested critical race theory or diversity, equity, inclusion. He says, this is a direct quote from Mr. Kinsey from Midland, we will fight for these three letter words instead, G-O-D, G-O-P, and U-S-A. So I do believe Christianity is the answer to your question.
Well, even within that faction, it's my understanding that there are multiple versions of that text. I question, will that raise more argument on the decision-making side, you know, within the agency and the committees that are vetting text like they would any other textbook or curriculum? Are they considering that? And in doing so, are they also considering that focusing specifically on that text is exclusionary to people of other faiths? And or are they going to include text from other faiths as part of that literacy push? I have more questions.
Yeah, I believe that is a question mark. Matthew, your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I'm just wondering if we'll ever get back to normal in this country. This is like, to me, this sounds really ridiculous. I think that we've got a lot of real major hurdles when it challenges right now when it comes to public education in Texas and across the country. I think our biggest concern right now should be on teacher retention and hiring quality teachers. I think we should be focused on the basic allotment. But to get distracted with this, I see this as being part of the culture war. You know, adding the Bible into public school curriculum and incentivizing that with tax dollars, you know, I just think that's wrong on quite a few levels. I can't imagine the legislation is going to allow the Quran to be used for, as, you know, high quality instructional materials. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe that's going to happen. I'd be very surprised. I don't think they're going to let the Old Testament be used as high quality instructional materials.
Well, hold on. The Old Testament is part of the Bible. Let's make sure we mention that.
Okay. But yeah, I think that this is really just another political distraction here. I think that this is going to upset a lot of people. Maybe it'll make some people happy, but I don't think that this is the focus we should be putting on right now in terms of public education. I don't see integration of the Bible as raising literacy scores significantly. I don't think that's going to happen, but I could be wrong.
It may or may not. I don't think there's a lot of data on that. But regardless, the fact that the state is tying this to that initiative towards high quality instruction materials, if it opens the door for all faiths and all dogmas to be recognized, that would be great. But I sure have not seen a lot of information about HQIM resources for the over 400,000 Muslim Texans right that we have living in the state, the nearly 200,000 Jewish people that live in this state, or let alone any parent who, regardless of faith, simply disagrees with the teaching of religion in public schools at all, no matter what the tenets of that education.
As a former English language arts and reading teacher, I spent the first 3 years of my career teaching high school English. I also would really like to understand the mindset behind this tie to literacy. Just strictly from a professional standpoint, I question the validity of the Bible being an effective instructional anchor text for learning literacy at such a young age, because the way the Bible is written is very different from modern and even academic English in most cases. So I'd be curious to know, I'm giving the benefit of the doubt to whoever is suggesting that this be done, that they may have a true academic implication, but I would be curious to understand the research behind that decision-making.
I think that's a really valid question, worth answering, worth exploring, and money is a real part of this as well. If we're incentivizing the teaching of certain documents, let's say, in schools, maybe this is a chance for districts to game the system to get that $60 per student. In fact, queuing up one more news item here, let's talk about the basic allotment of funding for public schools here in Texas, a number which has not increased in this state since 2019, 5 years ago, which might not sound like a whole long time ago, but this is a pre-COVID era that we're talking about since the amount of money going to public schools has gone up in this state. Matthew, would you like to tell our listeners a little bit more about this basic allotment stagnation?
Yeah, so to put it in simple terms, the basic allotment is the amount a school gets based on its attendance. So the more students a school has in attendance, the more money they get. If a student leaves a school or a district, that school loses that money. So in the example of vouchers, if a child decided to, or parent child decided they wanted their kid to go to a private school, the money that the public school gets from that child would leave. And so this is the basic allotment is the main source of income for a school. And this is public tax dollars.
Basic allotment is also paid per head, and it's a flat rate. So back in 2009, that basic allotment amount was $4,765 that was paid through the course of the year to the school district for each enrolled student. And then that amount, again, as Matthew was saying, is prorated based on attendance. If the student didn't attend that day, there's a certain amount that's docked from that amount per head. Over the course of a decade, in 2019-2020 school year, that basic allotment was increased to $6,160 per head. And to our knowledge, it has not been changed since. So that is where the basic allotment stands.
Right. And in that 5 years, we have seen a global pandemic. We also are seeing in this country record levels of inflation, and yet money has stagnated for schools, which I think is why on May 13th, Representative John Rosenthal, a Democrat from District 135, which I believe covers Cypress, Katy, that area of Texas, he and a group of 39 Democratic representatives sent a letter to Governor Abbott himself urging him to, quote, immediately call a special session to pass an education funding package to address the school budget crisis unfolding statewide, end quote. And he did include in his ask for there to be provisions addressing school safety, another important issue, which we've talked about before. In the past, funding for public schools has been let's say, held hostage along with this school voucher push from the governor. And unfortunately, I don't believe that I have seen a great deal of urgency on this issue coming from the governor's office, especially as we approach this upcoming legislative session. What do you all think is the outlook for the remainder of this year? Do you think we might see another special session for educational funding, or is the governor's focus elsewhere?
I personally, just based on the track record of what we've seen and what has been promised by Governor Abbott, is that everything and anything related to school funding will be contingent upon or even held hostage maybe by the conversation around vouchers. I do just want to add that there has been legislation from the previous session regarding school safety with regard to employing a full-time armed police officer on every campus, for which funding has not been allocated. And that's a good example of the dollars and cents that we talk about when it comes to education funding. I'm not a math person, but I don't need to be a math person to know that this math is not mathing. Because if you are talking about employing a full-time salaried safety officer on the campus, because my district has like 131 campuses, and you're talking about $80,000 on average for a police officer's salary. I mean, just my district alone, that's $10.5 million that we have to come up with out of thin air. So there's a lot of, when it comes to education finance, I think what we can all start with is the understanding that there's a push for all of these initiatives for student outcomes and school safety, and they're all good in those regards. And we have to figure out how to pay for them. And unfortunately, where things stand right now, it seems as though the state is saying, do more with less.
And I'd like to point out that Texas ranks 42nd in terms of funding for public school. So, you know, this isn't like, you know, Texas is, you know, in the middle of sort of like on the national level. Now, in addition to that, I also want to point out that Texas has billions and billions of dollars in surplus right now that it's just sitting on. So we could do a lot better in terms of raising that basic allotment. And as Lance had pointed out, that number has been stagnant since before the pandemic, before inflation hit the country. But that is something that has to change. Now, to answer your question, Lance, do I think, based on the sort of like track record and trajectory, that we're going to see an increase in public ed funding? I do. I think because vouchers are going to pass, because of the change in the sort of like the political landscape, I'd be surprised if Abbott did not raise the basic allotment. But I'm wondering what kind of contingencies that is on, and whether that raise in the basic allotment is going to be substantial enough to offset inflation and all the other costs that we're going to have to incur, public safety being one of them too, of course.
Right. Well, as the summer months wind on and we continue to have these conversations, we'll creep closer and closer to another legislative session next January. And to all of my close friends and family who think that I'm just kicking it, binge watching Netflix or taking mini trips around the country, I mean, well, I am doing that too, let's be honest, but all three of us remain plugged in to these developments as they will continue to...
You deserve it, Lance. We all do.
Yes. As they continue to affect us as teachers, as well as all of the great students that we get to see again in August. Thanks for another amazing episode, y'all.
Thank you for listening to All Things Education.
Be sure to leave us a review and share the show with everyone you know.
And if you liked what you heard, stay tuned for more compelling conversations with Natalie, Matthew, and Lance.
Until next time, Texas.